Senate will come to order. Too many things going on. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Roll call for Thursday, February 20th. Anderson, District 2?
Yes.
Anderson, District 28?
Yes.
Barnard?
Yes.
Bebout? Burns?
Yes.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Yes.
Coe?
Yes.
Cooper?
Yes.
Kraft?
Yes.
Dockstader?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Emmerich?
Yes.
Esquivel?
Yes.
Geis?
Yes.
Hastert?
Yes.
Hicks? Hines,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
aye, here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Ross,
here.
Bebout,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by Pastor Minder.
Let's pray. Father, I thank you for another day of life. Lord, I thank you for our founding fathers who in their wisdom set up a government where we're not ruled by a king or an emperor or a dictator, but we're a government of the people and by the people and for the people. And Lord, this week I went to the Wyoming State Senate site and looked at all the occupations of the men and women in this room. And it's amazing to see how we are led and served by ranchers and businessmen, an optometrist, oil and gas man, a chemical engineer, economist, a pilot, a nurse, a librarian, a natural resource manager, a mechanic, a radio host and publisher, electrical contractor, an investment banker, and an auctioneer. Oh, and lawyers. But nothing's perfect. And Lord, I just pray for these men and women as they push through this budget session with the long hours and the tediousness of all the numbers. And I just pray you give them and their staff and the clerks and everybody behind the scenes the energy to push this through to the end. And most of all, Father, we want you to know that we're grateful. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball. Senator Hastert.
Just a clarification there that the state of Wyoming may not be ruled by a king, but certainly the Senate is.
It's good to be king. Senator,
I'm going to pray that the preacher have a flat tire on the way home.
Reading, correction, approval of the journal. Reading clerk will read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 19th, 2014, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, chairman.
Are there any objections? Hearing none. The report is adopted. The doctor today is Dr. Jake Beringer from Cheyenne. Doctor, stand, if you would. Nice to see you. Today in history, 1962, John Glenn made space history when he orbited the world three times in 4 hours and 55 minutes. He was the first American to orbit the Earth. Quote for the day, talk low, talk slow, and don't talk too much. John Wayne, the Duke. We are not that order of business. House bills on first reading. House Bill 8, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 8, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Court Reporter Fee Elimination, an act relating to district courts. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 8 is referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 18, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 18, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Coroner Standards Enforcement, and Act Relating to Coroners. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, excuse 2. Third reading.
House Bill 18 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 3, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 3, sponsored by the Education Committee, Alternative Schools, and Act Relating to School Finance. Pass the House on an amended form on third reading, ayes 49, noes 10, excused 1.
House Bill 3 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 70, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 70, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, State Parks Peace Officers Benefits, and Act Relating to the Wyoming Retirement System. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 45, noes 15, excuse 2.
House Bill 70 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 83, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 83, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Insurance, Coverage of Inherited Enzymatic Disorders, an Act Relating to Health Insurance. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 49, noes 9, excuse 2.
House Bill 83 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority, floor leader. Mr. Majority, floor leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on third reading and final passage. Do you have a consent list?
I sure do. Mr. President, I move the following consent list for third reading bills. Senate File 28. Post-conviction actual innocence. Senate File 66, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Senate File 67, Administrative Rules Streamlining. Senate File 68, Obsolete Laws. Senate File 71, Reversion of Appropriations. Senate File 75, Environmental Protection Agency Actions. Senate File 76, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct. Senate File 92, WCC Director Ex Officio Memberships. Senate Joint Resolution 1, Regulation of Carbon Dioxide Emissions.
Would any member of the Senate like any of the bills on the consent list removed? Hearing none. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 28, Senate File 66, Senate File 67, Senate File 68, Senate File 71, Senate File 72, Senate File 75, Senate File 76, Senate File 92, and Senate Joint Resolution 1. He didn't. I may stand corrected. Is Senate File 72 off the consent list?
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry.
That amendment that's circulating, Mr. Right. President.
So Senate File 72, thanks to the chief clerk, has corrected me, is not on the consent list. So all others on the consent list are still there unless somebody wants one removed. The assistant chief clerk will call the roll.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2,
aye.
Anderson District 28,
aye.
Barnard,
aye.
Bebout,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader, Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fleteren.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 28. Are there any changes?
Ross, no.
President Ross, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing.
Perkins, aye
to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 28. 28 aye. To no. Senate File 66. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 66. 30 aye. Senate File 67, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 67, 30 aye. Senate File 68, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 68, 30 aye. Senate File 71. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 71. 30 aye. Senate File 75. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 75, 30 aye. Senate File 76, are there any changes? Hastert, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Escobel, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing, vote closed. Senate File 76, 27 aye, 3 no. Senate File 92, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 92, 30 aye. Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, are there any changes? Schiffer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, 29 aye, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, following Senate files and Senate Joint Resolution have passed the Senate. Senate File 28, Post-Conviction Actual Innocence. Senate File 66, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Senate File 67, Administrative Rules Streamlining. Senate File 68, Obsolete Laws. Senate File 71, Reversion of Appropriations. Senate File 75, Environmental Protection Agency Actions 2. Senate File 76, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct. Senate File 92, WCCC Director Ex Officio Memberships 2, and Senate Joint Resolution 1 have passed the Senate. Senate File 72, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 72, sponsored by Senator Case, burglary, an act relating to crimes and offenses, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 72.
Senate File 72, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 1.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thanks for your patience. Mr. President, I appreciate the work of several people on this. Most notably, I want to thank my co-sponsor on this amendment for helping to make this a much better bill. I have shared this amendment with the lobbying groups that...
You need to move them. Move.
I'm sorry. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 72. Thank you, and I apologize. I have shared this amendment yesterday, last night, actually, with lobbying folks about on this bill who have expressed some concerns. And I think this amendment really does address most of the technical concerns that people had and were the subject of an email a couple of days ago from our law enforcement community. I'm not trying to represent that they support the bill. I actually haven't heard back from them, Mr. President. But I'll tell you that this addresses kind of the technical issues. And... if I could get my, if we could get the minority or majority floor leader back, who helped me to draft this amendment, I will say, what this does is to make this a what's called a lesser included crime, Mr. President. So it basically takes the elements that I put in as an exception to the burglary statute before, and it lists them as a Section D, which has those basic elements. Remember, it's a small item. They didn't enter with the intent to commit a felony. It was an unoccupied building, and it wasn't a place where people live. Because you understand, Mr. President, the real thing about burglary is it was about a very dangerous crime where people would enter into a house where people lived, and something really bad can happen. And I've tried to take out the dangerous portion of the crime, and this creates burglary... for minor theft as a lesser included crime under burglary, Mr. President. I thank my co-sponsor for his work on it. I really do think it achieves what we need to achieve.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendment, what this does with respect, and I apologize for moving back and forth. We've got these amendments. If I repeat things, I apologize. What it does is we create a brand new crime, which is the burglary with the theft of minor items, so that the prosecutor has the capacity to come in and to prosecute under the same jury instruction that he would have done under the old law. And he's got another tool in this case to say, if you did something that really doesn't look like a felony, we'll charge you with a misdemeanor. It's no different than you get first-degree murders, manslaughter. You have maybe the same elements for multiple crimes, but and the jury and or the prosecutor can choose which category to fit. So this does not disrupt any longer the concerns that law enforcement had with respect to altering the definitions of burglary and eliminating at all that ability to use that jury instruction. What we will do now, though, say is you now have one more additional crime that you can use in those instances where you think a charge ought to be made, but ought to be a misdemeanor and not a felony. I'd urge your support of the amendment.
Larry Christensen.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment. Folks, this amendment, while it is structurally better and does do some clarification in the statutes, the elements of the amendment are still the same, and that is that it shifts the burden over to the landowner that if you don't have a lock on your barn, if your car isn't locked, they can still go in, take up to $999 in value out of it. I need to, just for a second, if you'll think back, how many of you I know where they keep your cars locked all the time? How many of you keep all your outbuildings locked? And that idea of, while it is a lesser, there is a lesser crime, nonetheless, it changes the standard, and it changes what was an action that was a felony with this new set of statutes or this new proposed language, a misdemeanor. It's about trust in your community. It's about a sense of confidence on where you live and who your neighbors are. Think about what the value is if somebody takes your wallet out of your car and the chaos that causes in your life. If they take the tools of trade out of your vehicle or out of your barn. The prescription in your car that's critical for your health. There's all kinds of different issues here. And while structurally it does set it aside and clear up what it is, it doesn't change the initial problem. It takes what's a very serious crime, a breaking and a stealing, and this suggested language in this bill turns it into a misdemeanor. Very, very different in the eyes of the law and the court system on how it's handled. This really is about Wyoming. If we lived in L.A., there's a standard out there. You better lock everything up. But that certainly isn't the standard I believe that most of us live by. I'd encourage you to vote against this.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for a second time.
President, I appreciate it. It really doesn't do that. And I appreciate the concerns of our colleague from the Northwest, but it really doesn't do that. Under the facts that he just described, they would still fit under the burglary crime. And the prosecutor could still charge that as a burglary. Now, if it was my wallet, it's probably a misdemeanor. If it was somebody else, it might be a felony. When you walk in and what's happening here, though, is there are times where things can happen that really don't deserve a felony. And this gives one more tool, another crime that the prosecutor in charge. But nothing this amendment makes sure that the original crime of burglary does not change. And if you break and enter, you still get the burglary. This does not carve out an exception. Doesn't make this is not a defense to burglary. Burglary is still a crime. The prosecutor could still prosecute it. Now there's a second offense that a prosecutor could elect to prosecute under as a misdemeanor. It's a good solution to the problem. I urge your support.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On against the amendment. As I think about that, I can appreciate what that is, but I think there's other already available vehicles if the prosecutor believes that there's a lesser intent or wants to cut somebody a break because it's their first offense. There still is in the statute other opportunities to plead out or to make other charges. But this is, as I look at this, this is a little bit different. I mean, first of all, the fact that no one's there, Mr. President, I mean, that may just be by happenstance or fortune that no one's there. If they went in and someone was in there, I mean, is it just the luck of the draw that no one happened to be home when you were there? What if someone had been there? There's two things that make this different than just a petty larceny, Mr. President, because if someone's there, just a few years ago we had a big debate about the Castle Doctrine. And what happens when somebody invades your home and the right that you have to meet with force. And so if just think about that from that perspective, from the homeowner's perspective, someone comes into your home, whether it's locked or not locked, comes in your home with the intent to take your property, or if that creates almost a presumption that they're there to do you bodily harm, you potentially can shoot them and not be prosecuted for that. And so when you're going into a closure, when you're going into somebody else's building, we've recognized that that's a different than just maybe coming onto someone's property and walking off with the ugly pink flamingo out of your front yard. This is a different thing. And, when I was a kid, nobody locked their door on our street. Not very many people locked their door in our town. And it's not that way anymore. While you may say that someone's got, it's just, to me, it's offensive when someone says, well, you know, it's your fault because you didn't lock your door, you didn't lock your car, and that's why your stuff got stolen. You know, maybe that's dumb on my part, but at the same time, I don't think it forgives the action.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment and the process, probably on and for the bill. Mr. President, look at this carefully. It does, yes, there are some other vehicles that a prosecutor could use when he thinks it's a lesser crime, but this removes the opportunity for a prosecutorial overreach and charging a felony when a felony really isn't appropriate. Look at the language very carefully. The building or structure or vehicle was not designed or adapted for overnight accommodation. You've knocked out from this lesser crime, if it's a home, this lesser crime cannot apply with that. The minor outbuildings and whatnot, you're saying they weren't occupied. In fact, you can usually tell. I can tell from all the years of experience I've had going door to door looking for people. You can usually tell whether a minor outbuilding has got somebody in it or not. And I'm periodically looking for people because I want to talk to them. It's not a problem that somebody might be there for happenstance. Same with an automobile in virtually all cases. What you're doing is saying, we've had enough, Mr. President, of overcharging, of filling our penitentiaries with people convicted of a felony when a felony charge is really not appropriate. You're not forgiving the action. You know, a year in the county jail is a very serious penalty. It's not a felony. It doesn't have the long-term consequences, Mr. President, that a felony has. But it's an appropriate penalty that fits the crime that this amendment describes. I urge us to adopt the amendment and to adopt the bill.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, thank you. On and opposed still. This is a felon training bill. It really allows you to repeatedly steal for under $1,000. And we're actually taking people and we're training them to be able to be charged with misdemeanor repeatedly and get off with it. And felons are felons for a reason. You know, it's did not enter with intent to commit a felony. Entered with intent to steal less than $1,000. So we're going to say that's fine. That's not a problem. This deal really, I really look at it that way. It's a felony training bill. There's a reason we have felonies. And you lose some really serious rights for them. And we teach our kids that. Don't steal, because once you're a felon, you lose all kinds of rights. Crimes are serious, and crimes of theft are not victimless crimes. You lose a lot of stuff. This still is it's a bad bill, and it doesn't work. The bottom line of it is, let's not train felons.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment. And we've heard a whole bunch of discussion against the bill and against the concept, and that's fine. That's well and good. That's what we do. We all argue with each other and agree or disagree on the issue. But this amendment, all this amendment does is actually make the bill conform to the law. So even if you're against the bill, you should still vote for the amendment just in case the bill passes, so that it is legal.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think I'm on the right one, 7201. But there's a little, I think there's some conflict in here, because in D it says occupied structure and then an occupied portion thereof. And then we go back in, it says it's a minor theft if it's occupied. Then we go in the second Romanettes here and says, well, it's not occupied. And I'm just wondering why We didn't say in D, non-occupied structure, separately secured or non-occupied portion thereof. Because it looks like you could go into a building, and if you scare the people out, you're okay.
For the amendment.
For your second time, Senator Christensen.
On and against the amendment. Just to help kind of put this in perspective, yesterday you all received a very nice handout with some stick figure drawing on it. I just ask that when you think about this amendment, and while it may be a better form of legal language for the statutes, take the face off of that little stick figure and put your neighbor's daughter on it. Put the old people that live across the street on it, and you start to get a sense that it isn't okay to have people going in and out of your property, taking things, just whether they're, you know, it's inside or outside, or whether it's locked or unlocked. It's just not right.
Okay. Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time. Hearing none. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the discussion on this. Mr. President, try to clear up a couple things. Occupied structure is actually defined in the law as a place where people occasionally go. And, in fact, an empty vehicle under the law specifically defined as an occupied structure. So the language on line 34 that says not in fact, the modifier of in fact, makes it so that there's nobody there. That's what we're trying to get at. This is trying to carve out the thing where it's not dangerous and where you're not going to encounter another person, and it's not a place where people live. And there's a couple more to it, that in fact you didn't intend to commit a felony. Mr. President, the stick figure drawings aren't very good, but I look at it and I think that maybe my own son could be the person on that. And I think, boy, do I want the consequences of that for that. It could be your son. It could be your grandkid. You know, a felony is such a huge thing. It's really not about the jail term. Probably they're not going to get the big jail term. They could, though. They could get up to 10 years. The real consequences are all are the consequences of being a felon. Now, misdemeanor, they can do that now. They can charge him with larceny, which is up to 6 months in jail and $750 fine. That's actually less of a crime than what I'm proposing for the misdemeanor burglary. So if you want to talk about it being some kind of a training ground, you ought to like this better than because the alternative is the only way you can escape it, charging with a felony, is to charge him with larceny. And that's the misdemeanor larceny right there on those stick figures, which is less than what I'm proposing. You know, a year is a long time. We've said that. If this is serious, but it still falls within the misdemeanor, they can get the maximum penalty. I'm for the amendment and for the bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 72 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question.
You ready for the question on the bill? Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and against the bill. In my north part of my district, there are people that rent, and I think we're all thinking of people who own their houses, but there's people who rent who don't have anything of value above $1,000, and a lot of it's laying around outside their abode. And if you came in there to take it, you'd probably get attacked by the dog, and if you didn't, you'd probably get shot by the owner. But the value of that property is not $1,000, and they are very possessive of anything that they have because they have little or nothing. And this bill means that then that's a misdemeanor and lessens the issue a lot for all those people. So I would recommend you vote against the felony training bill. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Mr. President, I guess I have to relay a little real-life experience of right here in Laramie County where I had probably close to $1,000 of tools stolen out of the back of my pickup in a parking lot over here. And so I reported to the police, and they said, well, do you know whether it's $1,000 or not? And they said, well, why? And he says, well, because if it isn't $1,000, it isn't a felony. and our prosecutor won't take up anything that's not a felony, because they just don't have time for the larcenies and the non-felonies and the misdemeanors. And you know that's our justice system. It's overloaded by people that break our laws, and they frankly only have times in many circumstances that they can only address the felony situations. And so if we make this a less than a felony, I think that's going to take place. I really do. It's going to be sorted out between the wheat and the chaff. All the little stuff goes out the back. The only thing you're left with is felonies. So essentially, you have no justice whatsoever for your misdemeanors and your larcenies of property theft in parts of this state. And that's just the way it is. So I'd say keep it a felony, Mr. President, if you want any justice at all.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the bill, and ironically for the very reason we just heard. It's good to actually have the ability to separate the wheat from the chaff in some circumstances and decide, does this crime rise to the level of felony? Well, if so, burglary. Does this crime rise to the level of felony? Well, no, it really doesn't look like it. This was pretty minor. This was a first time, a small amount of value. And therefore, the judge in that instance can actually use their discretion to make the determination of what the appropriate crime is, or the jury, or the prosecutor. That flexibility is what we need in a circumstance where we have limited resources and are unable to imprison absolutely everybody, because we just can't afford, when people commit minor crimes, to put them away for 10 years. It's expensive. Obviously, we don't want to have a training ground for felons. And if we did, I think we should study that through the Interim Committee of Education. You know, we want to take a good look at the felony training ground if we're going to do that. But this piece of legislation provides us with more flexibility to utilize our limited resources in the best way possible. I believe we should support the legislation and appreciate the author bringing it.
Further discussion. Senate File 72, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon? Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fladren.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
14 aye, 16 no.
Senate File.
I'm sorry. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 14 aye, 16 no.
Senate File 72, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority members of elected to the Senate, Senate File 72 has failed to pass the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Consideration of bills on general file. Hey.
Thank you, Mr. President. We were discussing the merits of the last bill. There's still disagreement in the back row. Words about reconsideration trying to kill it. I was saving you another vote. Mr. President, I move that we resolve ourselves into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senator Anderson. One time, no, they walked out of it.
Yeah, one time.
They walked out of it.
Get back in this.
Yeah.
Why did I do that?
Members of the Senate, Wyoming Senate has a reputation of getting things done and doing what's necessary. We have a large workload ahead of us. And so I would say that let's rise to the challenge. The challenge is listed on the board over there. So with that, Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 34. The clerk will please read the Senate file.
Senate File 34, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Involuntary Hospitalization Emergency Hearings, an act relating to involuntary hospitalization. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hickson, Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 34, Involuntary Hospitalization Emergency Hearings. There are no amendments for a discussion of this bill. I yield to Senator Escobel.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I bring to you Senate File Number 34, Involuntary Hospitalization Emergency Hearings. As the bill states, it's an act relating to involuntary hospitalization, clarifying provisions relating to representation of the state in emergency detention hearings. As most of you are quite well aware, I'm sure, is that involuntary hospitalizations brings together two very critical, important rights. One, of course, is the right of the individual to his or her freedom, and the other is the right for the protection of society and protect someone from their own self if they have some kind of mental or physical problem. And one of the problems that we've had with this whole area of involuntary hospitalizations is there's been a difference of opinion in terms of the role of the county attorney in representing and who represents the state. This bill seeks to clarify that responsibility. And basically, that's on page 2, where it says that the county attorney of the county where the application is filed shall appear in behalf of the state at the hearing. As stated previously, there has been some confusion in terms of the role of the county attorney, and this seeks to clarify it. If there are any questions, try to answer them. Otherwise, I ask for your favorable recommendation.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions, conversation regarding this bill? Seeing then, all those in favor of Senate File 34, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion. let's see. Senate File 34 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 53.
Senate File 53, sponsored by Senator Case, Unfair Trade Practices, an act relating to trade practices. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee to hold rise and report to do so the recommendation of Senate File 53 do pass the Senate Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman, but I think it will make a lot more sense if we explain.
Senator Case, would you like to go forth with the explanation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would. Mr. Chairman, this is about the practice of publishing mugshots online and then charging people to take the mugshots down. Mugshots are obviously they're a public record, Mr. President, so when you ask people to take a public record down, you better have a good reason. And the only reason that we ask them in this bill is if the person is actually not convicted. So they're found innocent or for other reasons the conviction doesn't occur. What they can do under this bill is to ask the publisher of the mugshot to take it down. And the publisher must comply within 30 days. And if they don't, it comes under our Unfair Trade Practices Act, which calls for civil penalties, Mr. President. That's the bill in a nutshell.
Senator Scott.
President, I ask Senate committee amendment to be read at this time.
Senate File 53, Sending Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 2.
Proceed, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, what the Standing Committee Amendment does is confine the bill to the actual target of the bill, that we're really trying to put a stop to some of these people who are essentially trying to extort money to get mugshots taken down. The amendment says that pretty bluntly, and who charges individuals to remove their photographs. What the effect of this amendment does, as well as concentrating on the abuse we're really trying to stop, is if you get a news organization, newspaper, that publishes online either in whole or in part, and many of them do these days, and doesn't take their stuff down routinely within 30 days, they could well have published a mugshot when they reported the story that so-and-so was charged. You don't want, for First Amendment reasons, to go back and force a newspaper to take down the newspaper that they put online 30 days ago. That's sort of an archive of the history of the newspaper. They aren't in the business of extorting money from people that have had mugshots published and then found innocent. So you don't want to make them a target. That's what this amendment does. I urge adoption of the amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion, when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 53, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 53 has passed the committee of the whole. Senator Landon, would you come take the chair, please?
Next bill for our consideration, Senate File 83. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 83, Oil and Gas Operations Bonding Requirements, sponsored by Senator Anderson, 02, and Act relating to oil and gas. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cooper, Hines, Rothfuss. No, Senator Cole, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a do pass recommendation for Senate File 83. There are no committee amendments, and I will yield to the sponsor, Senator Anderson.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is an amendment on this bill, and we can deal with that probably later. It's a pretty simple amendment. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, I bring before you today oil and gas operations bonding requirements. Mr. Chairman, the legislature passed the Wyoming Service Owners Accommodation Act, actually kind of better known as Split Estate Act, back in 2005. The idea then was to establish greater equity between the landowners and the gas operators who have subsurface lease rights to develop the oil and gas beneath the surface of lands. The intent was to create a balance between the surface estate and the mineral estate with reasonable accommodation of both interests. We're all, I think, familiar with the idea of split estates, that the person who owns a surface right, so to speak, may not, they may not own the subsurface rights, and so we have conditions where operators would like to come in and with the right of those minerals below the surface enter upon those surface lands. And so one of the primary intentions of this, of the Act, was to encourage good faith negotiations for the mineral lease and the landowner to negotiate surface use and damage agreement that fairly compensates the landowner for the damage on their surface property. I earlier had passed out a talking points. Well, that wasn't really talking points. It was a synopsis that I had staff write in regard to this whole process of bonding on to split estates lands, and that's out there. It takes some time to go through, but really there's a number of reasons, and I'll just briefly explain what the bonding process is, and it's in this memorandum that some of you have. But it talks about, down near the bottom of the first page, the provisions of the Act prior to the commencement of oil and gas operations. An oil and gas operator having the right to oil and gas underlying the surface can enter upon the estate as reasonably and as necessary to conduct oil and gas operations, while the operator has the right to entry at all times for non-surface disturbing activities. The operator shall first comply with the Act reasonably to accommodate existing surface uses. So prior to entry upon the land as gas operators, which they must provide notice provided by the Act and attempt in good faith negotiations of the surface owner. Then there's a list of things that they can do to get on. But the crux of the bill that I bring, that really the purpose of the bond serves to try to provide some incentive for good faith negotiations. So why did I bring this? Well, I was approached by a number of landowners in my district, and you know now that there's considerable amount of drilling going on in Commerce County. It's a different kind of drilling than we've seen there, and it's different from across the state. As you see this proposal in this budget, the current bonding level is $2,000. That's a minimum level by which they can provide in order to come on to properties. Well, we're finding, Mr. Chairman, many of these wells that we're drilling now are upwards of 10,000 foot in depth, with sometimes a lateral bore that goes 5,000 feet. It's a different creature in the fact that they are bigger, they take longer, there's more disturbance, there's more dislocation, and so landowners are becoming increasingly dissatisfied with the idea that the current bonding level is not sufficient to accommodate those damages that are occurring with this new drilling. Also, we find that in some instances, although not in a lot, but in some instances, and that's the reason that some of the landowners came to me, some operators will simply bond on this low $2,000 amount to eliminate having to take the time in order to come to any kind of agreement. They just bond on. There's no good faith bargaining. So what you see in the bill is I simply raised the bonding amount from $2,000 up to $10,000, and that also direction to the Oil and Gas Commission that they shall set their bonds or their blanket bonds at that minimum minimum of $10,000. So that's really essentially what I've done, is just raise it from 2 to 10. And, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be the appropriate time for me to pause and allow the sponsor of the amendment to introduce their amendment, unless there are some other comments.
Senator Bebout, would you like that amendment read in?
I was going to have some questions about the bill first, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay.
I apologize. Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my colleague from Glen Rock makes good points about the new type of drilling that's going on, and the surface damages are a whole lot different than we're used to. And I understand that, and I think that makes a lot of sense to have the discussion. The question I have is, does not the Oil and Gas Commission have the authority now to, if they in fact think it's a larger location or it creates more damage, to in fact ask the operator to increase the bonding limits? And the second question I have is sort of the unintended consequences. And there's one thing to have a 10,000-foot vertical and a 10,000-foot lateral horizontal leg that you have and the type of location you need, but there are a lot of production and sites in Wyoming that may drill a 1,500-foot well or a 2,000-foot well. And the bonding limit that you have in here of 10,000 per well site is more than the entire location costs to build. And so the question is, have you given any thought to the smaller wells, the shallower wells? And those are usually by small operators. The big boys don't even deal with those shallow wells. Did you give any thought or was there any discussion relative to that in terms of the difference between those huge locations where clearly there's some issues versus a small location that there may not be quite the extensive damage or concern, and that the other limit was satisfactory or somewhere in between?
Chairman, and Mr. Senator Chairman, I think that our good Vice President makes an excellent point. And one of the conversations I had is, in fact, with you, and I think you make a good point in regard to those smaller operators. And we'll see that this $2,000 amount was established at a time that there was a lot of coal bed methane drilling, and those coal bed methane rigs are, yes, and locations are quite a lot smaller. Now, in regard to the smaller rigs, number one, I would think, and you would know better than I, Mr. Vice President, but in most instances that surface agreements are made and discussions are had with the landowner, and I think would in most instances with the lower level of disturbances that bonding would probably not be necessary. Now, you're a much better judge of that than I, but I would say that if you have some thoughts in regard to how we could carve out a piece in order to make a different provision for those smaller rigs, I would certainly be up to listening to that. But for now, the research and the information that I got in regard to these other rigs, that the damages that we're seeing are upward of the $10,000 amount and in excess of the $10,000 amount, and that would be then conversation directed to the amendment, which not has been approached again. Back to the Vice President. Mr. Vice President, if you have thought something in mind how we could provide an exception for the smaller rigs, I would certainly be up to that.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions for the sponsor. I mean, one is, as a preface to that, you know, it was my understanding that the folks at the Oil and Gas Commission, that they set those bonds, and there's actually a process and a hearing where they go and set those bonds. And so I guess a couple of questions I'd have with that in mind is one, if you have visited with the Oil and Gas Commissions about your concerns, And if there's something about the process that isn't working, please share that with us. And if you have any information about what is the average bond, if you know of these folks that are going on, whether are they really doing the 2,000 or is the average, you know, when they do this, is it really closer to 8 or 9 or 10,000? If you give us a little more information about the process and what's broken and why it's not working now, I think that would be very helpful for us.
Chairman,
Senator Anderson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman did have staff and some others, and did have conversations with the Oil and Gas Commission. Previously, under the other condition we've talked about, and coal bed methane and that, probably not an issue. But one of the issues, at least it was expressed to me by the landowners that came to me, is the fact that if you do, in fact, bond or somebody gets the bond, there's a lot of legal complications, a lot of legal action necessary in order to do that. And then, in fact, there is damages done, and you do have to go to collect from the bond. It takes a filing and quite a process, with a legal process, in order to collect those bonds. The information that I got, I don't have the solid data, but the damages on some of these larger wells are upward and of $10,000, $12,000, $13,000 damages. We had testimony in committee from a knowledgeable person in regard to range conditions. And that individual just talked about the loss of grass. And, you know, and it's, grass is important to a landowner. But when you go in and build a location that's going to accommodate a rig that has the ability to go 10,000 feet and further in a lateral,
it's going to damage a lot more than the grass. And when you're taking up a location that's from 7, perhaps, 5, 6, 7, maybe even up into 10 acres, and you're going to level that site, you're going to go beyond the grass, beyond the topsoil, and you're going to go on, and it's going to require some considerable grading to make that location, but it's going to take a lot of restoration in order to put that back. More directly to your question, I think the bonding amounts that have been often now are being issued in those conditions by oil and gas are in many instances up near the level that I'm asking, 10,000, maybe in excess of 13 or 14,000. And so the idea being is, why did I pick this figure? I was asked that in committee. I picked this figure because within the language of this provision, you see in the memorandum on the second part, it says it should be noted the law specifically provides that neither a surety bond or a blanket bond is intended to establish any amount for reasonable and foreseeable damages. So the idea then also in 30-5402 says these bonds shall be in an amount good and sufficient. Now, good and sufficient, in my opinion, is that upwards of this $10,000 figure. That's why we targeted that, and I know there will be other conversation in regard to the amendment. And I think rather than continue this, I would pause and allow the sponsor of the amendment to press to present his amendment, and then that will probably go back more to the debate we're currently having.
Thank you, Senator. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 83. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 16.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 83. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, as it has been discussed here in the last few minutes, is that I'm not opposed to, with this amendment, to increasing the amount of bond required. I guess what I'm questioning is, with this amendment, is this a fair amount? After all, when you look at moving from $2,000 to $10,000, you're increasing it five times the amount it was before. And also, you have to understand that, and I apologize if I'm kind of repeating a few things that were already talked about here, but in order to make my point on this amendment, it's necessary. Surface owners, as was brought out, can negotiate anything with the subsurface owners of the minerals under that land. I mean, it could be a couple hundred dollars. It could be thousands of dollars. And they have that right to do that. So you have to understand that. The bond only comes in play is if the surface owner cannot agree with the subsurface owner on those amounts of negotiation for damages on their land. That's when it comes in play, and that's the only time. Also, you have to understand, which is brought out here, that the Oil and Gas Commission does have the authority, if you want to, or if a surface owner wants to request that the commission increase the bond amount, if you have justification for that. If you can justify that the commission, they will increase that bond to whatever amount they think that you're justified to have. Like I said, only when these negotiations fail, then this good and sufficient bond requirement comes into play. So then I guess it comes down to the question, what is good and sufficient? Or, in other words, what's fair? Certainly, fair is always in the eyes of the beholder. I'm sure there's some people that think that, you know, the damages are going to do maybe $100,000 or something. And so, and then the operator or the subsurface owner may say, well, gee, I don't think we could ever do $100,000 worth of damage, even if we really tried. But so there's that question of fairness. I mean, we have situations maybe where we have a piece of grazing land that's worth $175 an acre. And is $2,000 sufficient, or is $6,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 for that land? Then we may have a piece of ground that's worth $2,000 an acre, and it may have some structures on there also. And so where is the happy medium, I guess, on what is fair? Whether you have a $2,000 bond, whether you have a $10,000 bond or a $100,000 bond, it doesn't really it doesn't give the ability of the surface owner to have any more say in the operations anyway, regardless of what it is, of what the subsurface operator is going to be doing. Basically, I guess what it turns out to, fellow senators, is this is a policy decision for the legislature. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where we get to choose upsides, you know. And so whether we say that we need more bonding for the surface owners, or whether we want to have a fair amount for the subsurface owner of the minerals. So, in other words, we get to choose upsides, and we're trying to figure out what is equitable. And this is absolutely a policy consideration that we have to think about. The bill suggests $10,000, which I was saying, which is a huge leap from where it is right now. That's five times the amount of money that is right now required on a bond. So my suggestion in this amendment, as you can see on MEM, it's fairly small amendment, just a couple of sentences. My suggestion is that $6,000 would be a better compromise for a good and sufficient bond in what would be fair. And that's why I'm proposing this, and I would look for your favorable consideration on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Cooper. Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment. Folks, there's another side in this, and that's our legislatively appropriated funds to make up for the mistakes that the Oil and Gas Commission has perpetrated over the last several years. The big part of it was is that when you have change of ownership, they don't have enough bonding, they don't track down the owners, they don't take that liability and transfer it to the new owners, and we're having to put in substantial amount of appropriations on a yearly basis just to make up for those management problems that we've had at the Oil and Gas Commission. It's a big problem. Now, the $10,000 will get it back up into the area where maybe we won't have those problems. And the things that we've done, I think, in the bill on blanket changes, I think that's going to help too. But, you know, we're putting a lot of money out there out of the general fund because this bonding thing's been messed up, and I'm glad that this bill's coming forward, and let's just leave it alone.
Let's go to Senator Escobel first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking neither for nor against the amendment, but I was just wondering, in regard to this bill and the bonding of $10,000, what effect, if any, would this have on our orphan wells, abandoned wells? I understand, and I don't recall the exact numbers, but there's a substantial number of abandoned wells out there that require a huge amount of revenue to cap those wells, and I was just wondering how this would, what effect, if any, this would have on that particular issue. Thank you.
Senator Scott. I apologize. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might be able to answer that question. Under the orphan wells, you have blanket bonds for other operations, like an operational-type bond that you have with the state. It's for your overall operations, and this deals with your bond for the well site. And that type of bond, then, if you don't, in fact, plug that well per the oil and gas regulations and the commitment you made, that bond is invoked to ensure that you plug that well. And what you're talking about is the orphan well program that the Oil and Gas Commission, it's in the budget bill, and there's $3 million that comes out of the producer's conservation tax that all the producers pay into to deal with those. And that's primarily coal bed methane wells where operators, in fact, were under limit in terms of their operational bond, went belly up. And so the state, all the producers are paying in that to pay for that bond. These are really two separate issues. You got the well site versus the well, the integrity of the well itself and the borehole.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, speaking against amendment, I think it's fair to leave it at the $10,000 level. We, the amendment committee, done quite a bit of work in looking into the orphan well programs and those wells that are left to the state or the Oil and Gas Commission. And I think the figures varied, of course, according to the depth of the well. But they were from $7 to $10 a foot, if I remember correctly. So, and what we looked at was mainly the CBM wells up in the Powder River Basin. And there's all of a sudden that list grew to, I think the last I'd seen, 2,000 wells that operators either have gone out of business or they went bankrupt in those wells, or orphan wells. So now we're finding out that in most cases the bond does not cover the reclaiming of that. And part of that cost, probably the big cost, is right on the surface. So we want to have something that the surface can be reclaimed. And I might say, other than these cases where there are orphan wells, where the person that owned them or the company had gone out of business, went bankrupt, or whatever the case was, there's probably very few other cases that actually resolve or come to this point. Most of the parties, both the landowners and the oil and gas operators, work and can arrive on a surface agreement that takes care of it all. Occasionally, on each side, you get somebody that won't negotiate, I guess you'd say, and just have to come into the process. As an example, whether you think I'm agreeable or not, I had a company come to me this last fall. A pipeline was coming through. And there was absolutely no negotiation. They said, we pay $5, you can take it or leave it. It was costing 80 acres of my land that went from, for a pipeline that goes from Canada down to the area of Guernsey, Wyoming. And I told them that wasn't acceptable. Their remark, their person that was representing that company says, we will come on to your land first and condemn it. I said, if you running a pipeline from Canada to Guernsey, Wyoming, you telling me you will come into the middle of that pipeline, condemn 80 acres to get on, says that's our policy. I showed them where the door was. And that's the last we heard. But we do have these extreme cases. Ordinarily, we don't. But just one of the reasons for the $10,000, the higher bond, is to encourage everybody to come and negotiate. And I think it will, because in most cases, other than, a few people that are really extreme on each end, they will work out. And I have worked with, I don't know, they started developing in my region around 1970 with a big oil field that was popular, and over the years, that's what, 47 years ago, I have dealt with many companies, and we've always been able to come to an agreement. Some of them always told me I was hard to get along with, and I'll let you be the judge on that. But I think in most cases, the two parties will come together. But I think it's good to have the higher bonding limit to make them work to an agreeable solution.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, we had a good discussion about this in committee as well, and I think one of the things that's important when you're thinking about bonding is a perspective with regard to what the bond is supposed to motivate and what we're looking for through this type of bonding. The land use agreement is really the desired outcome, and it's supposed to provide some motivation for that. When you have small projects, and this is a concern of the Vice President of the Senate, then costs are certainly much lower than they are in the larger projects, but still, an individual well, even in a coal bed methane situation is going to be somewhere on the order of $300,000. It depends on the situation. So we're talking about at that point, a few percentage points relative to the total cost of the bond when you're at $10,000. But again, it's not an expense, even if you bond it on. It's still just a surety that's put out there. So under that circumstance, we might want to discuss the possibility of looking at lower figures when you have a low total project cost. The other side, though, Mr. Chairman, is when you have a situation where you have a pad-based project where you have five wells on an individual site. Each of those wells represents around $4 million invested. So that pad may be a $20 million investment. So you've got a $20 million project, and you're trying to get someone's attention over $2,000, which is 1/100th of a percent of the total project cost. It's hard to get someone's attention, bring them to a table to negotiate, when that is a trivial amount of money relative to the overall operations cost or just putting the project in place. It's not even the operating cost. Even if you multiply that number by five, we are clear up to 5/100ths of a percent of the project cost. And again, it's not a cost. It's simply a surety that you're going to get back. In terms of providing a motivating factor, I think the $10,000 is a better motivating factor, but realistically on those larger projects, if they want to bond on, they're still going to for the 10K. So when you look at it with a little perspective, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that lowering it further from the 10,000 to the 6,000 would be unreasonable. But the concept as proposed by the good vice president of trying to look at a scaled approach to it, where we're taking into account the project cost relative to the site in addition to the land, that might be a reasonable next amendment. Mr. President, I hope everyone rejects this particular amendment, or excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I gave you a significant promotion there momentarily, but I've taken it back since. Mr. Chairman, hopefully we can reject this particular amendment and perhaps craft one that keeps the costs scaling with the overall project cost, perhaps around 1%. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. I'm not sure I meet the height requirement even to be king for a day. So, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, again, I go back to a question. I don't think I've heard the answer for it yet. Is my understanding is that this is the minimum bond, and then ultimately the Oil and Gas Commission set the bond. And so I still haven't heard my question is what's not right at the commission that we need that message needs to be sent. And so, I at this point, I don't know. I know what the minimum is, but I thought the commission was supposed to look at the overall value of the project, the overall, and when what the, as I understand what the bond is, and if I'm wrong on this, please correct me, but I understand that the bond is not for the landowner to collect on. The bond is to cover, in the event that the landowner doesn't remediate, then the commission can hire the contractor to go out and remediate. So it's not available to the landowner anyway. It's to back up the commission's responsibility to reclaim the land. If I'm wrong on that, please let me know. Again, we go back. I mean, we've got a process in place. We've got an entire agency that looks at this and is supposed to be setting commensurate and appropriate bonds. And if that's not happening, I think that's the bigger policy question, and that's what we need. And this amendment gets right to the heart of that. What is going on at the commission that this is necessary and appropriate? And the fact that we have a few landowners that are disgruntled, that doesn't help me understand what's going on at the commission that this isn't being addressed appropriately with the discretion that they have.
Senator Schiffer.
Let me respond to that concern because misguided that it is, it's valid. What's actually now, is that cutting the middle ground or what? The question was, what is that happening at the Oil and Gas Commission? What's happening there is nothing. What happens is these bonds will go through for 2,000. And understand, I agree with my colleague. This doesn't go. The bond doesn't go to the landowner. It never does. But what the bond does, that's the incentive that an oil and gas operator has to negotiate with the landowner for reasonable damages. That's what the bond does. It never goes to the landowner. And they're pretty much the way it works. And my colleague from Campbell County was right. If you get the wrong company that comes in, and the landman says, I'm going to pay you $1 a year for one of these sites. And understand, when you're getting these big sites and they've got multiple holes on a single site, you're not just talking 1 year or 2 years. I got one right down the road, and we're on year three on that Hummer. So understand, it's not the rig comes in, then disappears. Nope. They're there for can be there for years, or at least 3 years. I don't know. Maybe some of them that I don't know about are longer. The size of this bond is the motivation for the operator to come negotiate with the surface owner. That's their motivation. Because if they can reach an agreement, then everything's good. And it is for reasonable damages. And what are reasonable damages? Well, part of it is the actual surface damage itself. For example, if it's in your hay meadow, say, and say it's one of these sites, it's going to be roughly 20 acres, it's going to be the road going in, and it's got to be graveled because you got mammoth, multiple water trucks going in and out 24/7 when they're doing a fracking job. Plus, you've got to have one of those big containers. The trucks can't keep up, so they build one of those big water containers, and it ain't no little old swimming pool. This thing is probably 30 yards across and three stories high just to hold the water to have it there. And then all the pumps and all that jazz. It's a wonderful machine. If you get a chance, go look at them. It's the best collection of machinery that I don't understand I've ever seen in my life. But say it's on my hay meadow. Not 20 acres. Get 3 tons to the acre. Each year, that's costing me $10,800. That's what I could sell my hay for that I'm not producing there. Plus, it means I probably can't run my water because their road comes right straight in. I can't run a sprinkler over where that is, so that takes the whole damn meadow out of commission. With the wrong operator, you can get that. The $10,000 bond is the incentive the operator has to come negotiate what is the surface damages. And it's the actual acreage, what they're doing on it, and also the time frame they're going to do it. It may be a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. But that's what you negotiate for. The operator can go into the Oil and Gas Commission, say, here's my $2,000, I'm bonding on. Then it's done. They're on you. In answer to it, so that's what's happening over there at that fancy big building in Casper. In answer to the concern about small operators, quite frankly, you don't have trouble with the small operators. They come in, one, they're very businesslike. They know exactly what they're going to do. They come in, they drill. It's a CBM well. Shoot, they could plug those in somewhere 30 hours. They were in and out and gone. I mean, they're little. It's these big things, somewhere between 15 and 20 acres for 3 and 4 years, and mammoth equipment in and out, and then in again. The rig goes away. The rig comes back in, and they redrill another hole. The fracking can take... It can take months. And literally, you'll have 10,000-gallon tankers going in and out 24/7 for as long as they're doing that. The bond we're talking about has nothing to do with orphan wells. It's the incentive to get a surface agreement, particularly for these bigger new technology wells. That's all it does.
Senator Hicks, I think you were next.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, not speaking for or against the amendment nor the bill, but to provide some information on some of the questions, in particular to the good senator from Natrona County. They have the authority to increase the bonds, but the process that goes through is they come in and they submit an application to bond on, and then they have to hold that application for 10 days in case there's a protest. So if somebody then wants to come in and protest that application, to go to a higher bond, then they have to convene a hearing. I would tell you that process is not necessarily either in the interest of the companies because it becomes time and expense. Those can drag out for some time. So you have to go through that process if you want to increase that bond. Oftentimes that includes legal counsel, witnesses, experts to come in. So while they have that ability, it's a little bit unwieldy for both the companies and extremely unwieldy for also the landowner. But that's the process, the answer. If you want to get that bond increase, you're going to have to protest that bond, and you have to go before the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. They convene a hearing. Everybody brings in their experts, and you go through the process. So that's the way you do it now. The simple fact is we're trying to cram a square peg in a round hole here, and I think the good senator from Fremont County's got it right. The systemic problem that we're dealing with here is we're trying to do a one-size-fits-all situation. But I will tell you, this is a kind of the insurance policy. This is the last thing that happens. And when your land has been disturbed and under these multiple pad wells, they can go up to 7 acres if it's completely flat, if they got to do a cut. It can be substantially larger than that. So I guess I look at this thing from a standpoint as what insurance policy does it take to guarantee that that land is put back into production. I will tell you, I've had the opportunity to work in some of the most brittle environments, very difficult to do reclamation in the state of Wyoming, and that's the Red Desert. Work diligently with some of the best operators that we have in the state of Wyoming, and I will tell you, in the worst-case scenarios, to reclaim some of these lands. And it's not as simple as just stripping it off and putting it back. It's how you strip it off, how you segregate it. It's a very complicated issue. But we have literally worked with some of those good operators, and they've had to spend upwards of $20,000 an acre to get their bonds back and to get their surface disturbance released from the Bureau of Land Management. So it can be a very costly operation in a difficult environment. Where a lot of this activity is going on today is not quite equivalent to the Red Desert in a 9-inch precip zone, but it can be extremely costly.
I think the Vice President was next, and then we'll come to Senator Anderson. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you know, just a couple of things for the body to consider on this. And I'm also a landowner, and I've been in a position just like my colleagues from Campbell and Johnson County. And the situations you explain are exactly right. And that's not the way things should be done. And it's wrong. But what you do, there's a flip side to this. And the flip side of this is if you have, the higher you have that amount, it truly is an incentive to come to the table and negotiate. But there are landowners out there that do not own the minerals. And there are landowners out there that don't care what you do. They really don't want you to drill. So they use that. The higher you lift that up, the more difficult it is for you. If you come in as a small operator and want to negotiate in good faith and you spent good money to try to acquire a BLM lease and there's just no negotiation to do, the point is it's one size does not fit all. And so, yes, to deal with the situations that my colleagues are talking about with the big operators, there's a legitimacy to that. The flip side is I think I make a valid point on how you treat the little guys. This could be used in the opposite way to for the landowner to, in fact, try to enforce things upon a responsible small operator that's trying to do it right. They just don't want them there regardless.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, my assumption is my, you know, we're in committee of the whole, but this would hopefully be the nearer to the end of the debate. Back on the amendment, one quick comment in regard to the good senator from Natrona County's questions in regard to what amount is appropriate to meet the damage. And I will say in this instance, it's been said repeatedly that the intention of this bond is not necessarily to satisfy all the damages. It's simply to bring people to the table. Regard to the amendment, I think people are more apt to come to the table if they pay $10,000 on a bond rather than $6,000 as the amendment costs or rather than $2,000 as the bill says. But let me say something in regard to whether or not we're trying to satisfy damages or whether or not we're trying to encourage conversation. The operator may request that the Oil and Gas establish amount. Oil and Gas Commission may establish amount for a blanket bond or other warranty after attempting consultation with the surface owner in the amount covering oil and gas operations on the surface land. Bold print. I won't speak too loud, but bold print. It should be noted that the law specifically provides that neither a surety bond or a blanket bond is intended to establish any amount for, quote, reasonable and foreseeable damages from the Oil and Gas Commission. So in other words, that simply says there's not an intention for that to cover all the damages, whatever they are. So my contention back on the amendment, it's up to you. Would you be more apt to come to the table in good faith if you were to put up 10,000
or 6,000. That's a policy question. With that, I would call for the question on the amendment. I would ask you then to vote no on the amendment.
Thank you, Senator. I will allow the sponsor of the amendment one last time.
Well, I am grateful to that, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for allowing the sponsor to speak last. Mr. Chairman, you know, as you can see, we've been all over the board here in the last few minutes on this issue. You know, we've talked about orphan wells, which has nothing to do with it, blanket bonds for performance. We've talked about pipelines, and we've talked about plugging wells, and we've talked about the economic cost of drilling and how its connection to all this is. We've talked about all these things. None of these things have anything to do with this bond that we're talking about here in this issue with this amendment. This amendment simply has to do what we think, what is fair and equitable, and a good and sufficient bond to be able to, for a subsurface owner to come onto the land and to drill a well, to allow for that bond to be placed to the benefit of the owner so that the reclamation work can be done. Now, I believe that the good senator from KC had very knowledgeable on this subject, and I do agree with many things he talks about. But the fact of the matter is, this is a very much a policy decision that we have to make here with this amendment and how we're going to handle this. Is $2,000 sufficient? Is $6,000 sufficient? Is $10,000? Is $100,000 sufficient? I mean, you could go on. Some people think that their land has gold on it. Maybe it does, and it's worth a lot more money if you disturb the land. Some people don't have as much faith maybe in their land, and they wouldn't expect as much. But the fact of the matter is we have to make the decision. I think that $6,000 is a pretty good jump from $2,000 on what we're doing here as a policy. And like I say, as was mentioned here, there's all kinds of different situations as to whether that number should be higher or lower. But I feel with this amendment that this is a fair and equitable amount, and I'd appreciate your consideration.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 83, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No.
No.
That amendment has failed. We are back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may, Senator.
Oh, division was called.
Division has been called. All those in favor of the amendment, please rise. All those opposed, please stand. As I mentioned, that amendment is dead. We are. Question having been called. All those in favor, of Senator Hines's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 83, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Senate File 83 has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may, Senator.
Members of the Senate, up in the gallery up here above the chairman is many, many of the police chiefs and sheriffs and law enforcement people from across the state. It's these fine people that take care of us during emergencies and when crimes occur and all those things. I would ask the Senate to please make them feel welcome.
Welcome and enjoy your day. I'm going to call on the lady first, Senator Kraft. You may.
This thing turns off.
Oh, Jay Nolte.
Turns off.
Wilcox, Deb Jackson, would you please welcome them to the Senate?
Senator Driscoll, I believe you were next.
Chairman, privilege of the floor. Thank you.
You may.
Pinned in by the law enforcement up above is Wyoming LEAD class, and I'm not sure what number they're on now. Wyoming is an ag leadership program that's developed a vast number of members of this body, one who sits in the back with me that I knew was class 2. I was in class 5. Would you please stand up and be welcomed by the Wyoming legislature? They're from all over the state.
Next bill for our consideration, Senate File 24. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 24, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Special Election Revisions, an act relating to special elections. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Which pleasure, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 24, Special Elections Revisions. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Reading clerk will read that in.
Senate File 24, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 24, and I would yield my time to the good senator from Campbell County.
Senator Hines, please go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is to update the laws for handling a special election in the event the candidates board cannot determine the outcome of a certain race or proposition. And, Mr. Chairman, I had a prop to bring in to help me, but they wouldn't let the county clerk come in, so I'm stuck with it. As I say, this is a bill that is pertains to handling special elections in the event that the outcome is in question. The current language requires that if an error was found that could affect the outcome of a race, the entire race had to be thrown out and a special election would then be held. The bill before you will do the following. It will allow the Kansas Board, which is a county clerk and a member of the Republican and the Democratic Party from that area, to decide if any or all parts of the race or proposition will be considered null and void due to an error that could affect the outcome of the election. It also allows the Kansas Board to decide if all of the precinct or only the precinct that the error occurred in, should part of the precincts are to be in the special election, those votes in the special election shall be added to the other precinct that was not declared null and void in the original election. The state Kansas board have already decided that a representative race that crosses 3 counties would only be done in 1 county following an error that occurred in that county. Current statutes state that any candidate who has clearly lost shall not continue on to the ballot for the special election. This bill would require all candidates to continue on the ballot, whether the new election include all precincts or only some of the precinct. This bill will continue to allow only voters who qualified to vote in that portion of the election at the end of election day in question. They will be allowed to vote in that special election. Time frame for sending ballots out and receiving them have been was updated to match how much time there really is to get those done. Time frame to return ballots and get replacement would change to 7 p.m. to unify the closing time of the polls. Mr. Chairman, this pretty well goes right through the bill and tell what it is. I will go on to the amendment now. The amendment looks long and fairly complicated, but what we done in the bill itself, it was talking about mainly primaries or general election, and as you look at the amendment, what we done was added in most cases or other special elections. This comes into play. The first thing, Mr. Chairman, we deleted line 1, page 7, because we are not repealing the provision that was in the original bill. As you go through the bill, you'll find out on the bottom of page 2, there, line 22 and 23, when a election, first with you add the votes of the special election to those that was not declared null and void, and then on line 24 you add other special elections. You do this also on page 3, line 15 and 16, and page 3 on the bottom line there on line 24 you add general. On page 5 you also on line 3, you add special elections. The amendment will delete on page 4, lines 9, 10, 11, 12 through the period, and also on the bottom, the last 4 lines, because we needed this section in the middle in, and we didn't want what we was deleting was taken care of in page 5 under 123. Also there on line 20 in page 5, we added other special elections. On page 6, we went in and we deleted line 3 and 4. We deleted that statute that referred to B, C, F, and G, and put in just the full statute, 2216-122. That's pretty well take care of the amendment. If there, then like I said, we did delete the repealer on page 7, line 20, because we needed part of that in. The clerks and the election offices have worked both on the amendment and the bill. If there's any questions on the amendment, I'll try to answer it. If not, I'll call for the question on the amendment.
Any questions, comments on regard to the amendment? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 24, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
Mr. Chairman, I'll call
that,
for the question.
That amendment has passed. We're now back on the bill.
On the file. Suggest if you have a lot of questions, talk to the county clerk.
You ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion when the committee hold rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 24, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 24 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 25. Before we read that, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You may.
Chairman, just to share a little bit of great news about the spirit of Wyoming. Today, over in Sochi, a Wyoming girl from Jackson, Reese Stiegler, is racing in the slalom. This is a young lady. Not only is her father an Olympian, but she's an Olympian in heart and spirit. She's got so much cowboy try. She was at one time one of the celebrated future stars, and then started undergoing some serious injuries. And she's come back injury after injury, continued to work it out, and today she's fighting for America, a good Wyoming girl. Just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
Thank you. Senator Driscoll, you look like you had something on your mind.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Fellow senators, join me in welcoming Newcastle Middle School class. This is the class that leads the state in EDGE and math. We're really proud of our Newcastle school system, year after year, coming up with great kids. Please join me in welcoming them.
Welcome, students. Enjoy your day. Would the reading clerk proceed with the reading of the bill? And what's the number? You can read that.
Senate File 25, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Election Code Revisions, an Act Relating to Elections. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 25, the Election Code Revisions. There is a standing committee amendment I'd ask to be read in at this time.
Senate File 25, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 6, line 18.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25 and ask that you yield my time to the tall senator from Natrona County for the bill and the amendment.
Senator Scott, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, let's deal with the Standing Committee Amendment first since it has been moved. It's in the oath that you take when you register, and the problem that there has been is there's been a provision in the oath where you swear that you're not registered in any other state or county, and typically that's not true. You're registering because you've moved and you haven't bothered yet to get rid of the old registration, and the election officials understand that and have developed a system that seems to be working quite well, where when you register someplace new, the place where you registered sends a request to your old residence to remove your registration there. And that works, but it no longer corresponds with our oath. So what the bill did was to remove that part of the oath. What we're doing with the amendment is saying that if registered in another county or state, I hereby request that my registration be withdrawn. It will solve a lot of problems. It solves a problem that makes people uneasy with good reason about our existing oath. And in fact, we had the husband of one of our prominent citizens nailed, I think, quite unfairly in the press over this particular issue within the past year. So it is a problem that needs fixing. I urge adoption of the amendment. Stand for any questions in the amendment.
Question being called for. Those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this is the fairly routine election code revision bill that we see, if not every year, more years than not. There are a few. It really comes as the world has changed and the feds change the rules and the technology changes. We have to update our election laws. There are a few substantive changes on page 4. What we've done there is when you register, the list here of electronic records are not public records, and they include any email addresses, just keeping up with modern technology and allowing people to keep those private. On page 5, a change of substance I think is potentially very important sometime, where it gives Secretary of State authority to issue directive to county officials as to how to conduct an election if you have a natural or some other kind of disaster. I can remember, Mr. Chairman, quite a number of years ago, a snowstorm when we had a September primary that prevented people in part of my county from getting to the polls at all. The highways in this rural area were closed. When something like that happens, you need to have, the Secretary of State needs to have formal authority. How do you deal with it? And you can't specify all the details. They have to make sense given the particular circumstance that happens. So that provision, potentially at some time, will be important. And then there's a lot, Mr. President, of just removing archaic things on page 14, line 10, page 15, line 12. You're removing voting machine labels, ballot labels. That technology is just not used any longer. There's a fair amount of that kind of cleanup. That's what really is the balance of the bill, other than the items we've already discussed. Mr. Chairman, be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I urge Senate to pass the bill.
Further questions or conversation regarding the bill? Senator Case?
Amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. This was the amendment. All those, any further questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, point of order. We did pass the amendment, but there's a second amendment.
Which okay.
The committee
well,
the whole amendment, which we haven't taken up yet. If it's appropriate, I'd ask it to be read in.
Okay.
Senate File 25, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 8, line 6.
Go ahead, Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25. Mr. Chairman, we talked about this in committee, and we just neglected to grab it when we came through. But it goes into page 8, and this is an issue where the county clerks transmit the poll lists. And what the bill does on page 8 on line 6 and 7 is say that not less than 10 days prior to the primary and general election, the county clerks, the old language was shall, the new language says may deliver up to 3 copies of the poll list to each precinct in the county. It made it permissive. And the reason the clerks wanted to do that was because most people don't ask for the poll lists anymore. If you're looking for voter information, I guess you get the electronic deal for your campaign, and so they don't actually ask for this. But we didn't think it was quite appropriate in committee to make it totally permissive, and that they should provide it on request, and that's what they intended. But and we discussed it in committee, but we just didn't get it as part of our amendment. So this proposed amendment says the county clerk shall, upon request, deliver up to 3 copies of the poll list. That's all it does. Clerks are fine with it. We just forgot to get it as part of the standing committee amendment. And I'd answer any questions or call for the question.
Questions in regard to the standing committee amendment? Seeing none. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the committee of the whole amendment, number 1, to Senate file number 25, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Now we are finally back on the bill. Is there any further questions, conversation about the bill? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate file 25, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate file 25 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 30. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate file 30, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA evidence, an act relating to criminal procedure.
What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
There
are some amendments, I believe.
I have to read the...
Yeah. Okay.
It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations. which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, the Committee of the Whole rise and report. Move it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 30, compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA evidence. Mr. Chairman, there is a Standing Committee Amendment, number one. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 30, Standing Committee Amendment, number one, page one, line five.
Go ahead, Senator
Chairman, I will move the Standing Committee Amendment, number one, and I'll get to that in the course of working the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, it sets out the compensation that goes to someone who has been exonerated based on DNA evidence. This doesn't happen often. I can tell you, to my knowledge, we've had one that settled. What I was told, it settled for in excess of $1 million. We have one that is pending. My understanding of the process is it is not all the way through the process to the exoneration stage, but it appears it may end up there. So we do have at least one possibly will qualify for exoneration under DNA. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to walk through the bill, kind of what it does. And what we're talking about, Mr. Chairman, will recall that we talked about what the process is to get exoneration. If you've been exonerated, what we're talking about, and we're over on page two where we get to something really substantive, if a person is qualified, we're talking about compensating them to the tune of $100 per day for the time that they were incarcerated. And then up to a maximum of, let me back up. In the bill, it's $75 a day. When you look at the amendment, the Standing Committee amendment, which I had read in and moved, we moved that figure to $100 a day. And then on line 21, page 2, in the current bill, the maximum payment is $300,000. The amendment moves it to $500,000. So we've raised those. That puts us pretty much in the same range as our neighboring states of Utah, Colorado, and Texas. Going on to the next page, under subparagraph C, the Attorney General, who tracks all these things anyway, keeps an eye on all things legal in this state, is the one that administers the money, makes sure that it's qualified to receive this money. The state treasurer can set up a distribution for it. We annualize that. Going on, there are some restrictions. And again, we're over on page four. The movement, and that's the term that we use for these folks, cannot receive compensation if he has any other actions pending. If there's something else out there that he maybe have a judicial obligation to address, they're not going to get the money. You can't offset it with any other expenses. The movement who receives compensation may not bring any action against any governmental entity or an employee of government involving the conviction. In other words, can't come back and have a civil suit as we had in one of these earlier in this state. He has to sign a release and waiver on behalf of himself and his heirs, successor, assigns, and so on. In other words, this is the end of it. The Administrative Procedures Act, I'm down on the bottom of page 5, are not applicable to this. Does not constitute sovereign immunity over on the top of page 6. And on page 6, line 4, subparagraph M, a movement is not entitled to compensation unless sufficient funds have been appropriated to the Attorney General to provide compensation. So This program only kicks in if we've appropriated the money. Understand the other alternative. If there's no money there in that account, then the movement, the guy who gets exonerated, has the ability to file a civil suit. And I referenced the one we've had earlier. That's the only one. These things don't happen very often. But he has the right then to file a civil suit for damages. In that case, what I was told is that one was successful for some substantially above what we're contemplating doing today. Going on, over on page 7, this is important, that waiver of immunity and actions based on contracts with the government entity and its employees, they were acting within their scope of duties, that they're not going to be sued. That's just the protections we need. And finally, and again, referencing the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 over on page 8, we have an appropriation of $500,000, and this is the cap if we get one of those exonerations that come through. This is what cover it. If you want some idea of how many years a person serves, if you vote for this amendment, which increases from 30 to 50 and from 300,000 to 500,000, roughly it will cover them somewhere in 12 years. They could be incarcerated for 12 years and plus a little bit, give or take. But that's roughly the time frame you're paying for at that rate. But that's what it amounts to. The money is actually paid out over a number of years, with the maximum in any one year being, if you follow the amendment, $50,000. Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the amendment has been moved. I'd like to discuss the amendment, then vote on it, and then take questions on the bill.
Okay. In regard to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senate File 30, all those in favor of that amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay,
let's. Division being asked for. Go ahead, Mr. Vice President.
Chairman, I ask that the first division be everything on Table 1,
Okay. No discussion on the divisions?
Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is there's a subsequent amendment coming that talks about the appropriation. By dividing this amendment, we leave in place on, if you look at the amendment on line 7, the $500,000. I think that's appropriate level. But I think that amendment, that part of the amendment is fine. And I would ask the buyer to support that amendment.
Okay, voting on the first part of the amendment, first part being line 1 down through 36 with attention being called to the amount of $500,000. All those in favor of this division of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
Division 1 of that amendment has passed. We are now on the second division. Go ahead, Mr. Vice President.
Against this portion of the amendment, it takes it up to $500,000 for the appropriation. And what we did by adopting the first part of this amendment, we said the amount shall be up to $500,000, but the Section 2 appropriates $500,000, and the original bill had $300,000 in it, which was a more reasonable number in terms of the when we talk about the days being incarcerated and the amounts and the limits. Since we raised it from $30,000 to $50,000, that would take you to 10 years, but you'd only appropriate the $300,000. So I would ask the body to defeat this portion of the amendment, leave it at $300,000.
Discussion in regard to Division 2, which would be lines 37 to the end of the amendment. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit further explanation on the thought process. What you've got is so what the way the bill is now with Division 1 being approved, if the bill were to continue on and this is what it looked like, you still would have a max amount of $500,000 that they could do. The second thing happens is they get it's annuitized, so it's $50,000 a year that they get. So with a $300,000 appropriation, you've got an appropriation to satisfy that up to 6 years, and then with the opportunity to appropriate additional funds in the future if the amount is the maximum amount. I mean, you never know how long someone's going to be in. They might be in the maximum amount. They might be in less. So ultimately what that does is it gets us there. It gets us 6 years to if there was a maximum amount, get the rest of it funded. And in the meanwhile, we haven't tied up an additional $200,000 of general fund money.
Further discussion on Division 2, Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious. I don't see where they deleted Section 2 on page 6, but they want to label this second part of the amendment. They want to label it as Section 2. Shouldn't that be Section 3 and renumber? Just a technical question.
Senator, I think my thoughts are that we're okay with two divisions.
You don't have to eliminate two. Oh, that's a technical, come on.
I think we'll continue the discussion on two divisions, and we are on Division 2. Senator Schiffer, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I would urge the Senate to resist this. Matter of fact, I'd say vote no on this. I just want to make clear to myself what I'm going to do. Understand what you're really doing is, and understand that these cases take time. Finding the evidence takes time. Instead of covering, if the guy serves 12 years, you're going to cut him back to about 8 years or a little bit less, give or take a day or two here, in there. But the point is this. The figure we're at with the 500,000, for our part of the world, we're right about with everybody else. Understand what you're acknowledging or what we're doing is trying to make right a mistake. The state made a mistake when they found him guilty. We're trying to make that right. It seems to me you've got to be cognizant of that. It's all right. What is reasonable in this case? I don't know. Certainly your view is different if you've just spent 12 years in the slammer. But it seems to me this is reasonable. It seems to me we're on fairly solid ground in terms of lawsuits and those kind of things if we're pretty much in the middle of the pack of what other states are doing. If you go back to the 300, quite frankly, you'll be a lowball. Maybe low ball is good, I don't know. But understand, somebody somewhere is going to challenge this thing and say, whoops, they low balled this. And that's not what we intend to do. We'll acknowledge a mistake, we'll compensate for them, and they can go on with their life. So I urge you to resist it. I better sit down before I get knocked down.
Continuing Division 2, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I think the good senator from Campbell County is correct. Actually, if delete Section 2, there is zero appropriation. So actually what we need to do is vote Section 2 up, and then we'll deal with it on the second standing committee amendment.
Senator Burns, we are still on Section 2.
Yes. We're on the second portion of the amendment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we are. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask the body to vote no on this. If we did not have somebody who had already been victimized by the state,
we really do want to vote this down.
Yes, we want to vote this down.
Yeah.
Oh, then I agree.
With that, I think we're given some instruction from a good senator from Natrona County in regard to Division 2. Are we ready for the question?
Question.
Regard to Division 2, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senate File 30. All those in favor of Second Division, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of Section 2, please stand. Yeah, there we go. All those opposed, please stand. Division 2 has failed. We are now back on the bill, and there is another amendment, amendment number 2. Senator Schiffer, do you want to address? We'll go back to, I think, to the Mr. Vice President first.
Mr. President, so second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 30 be read at this time.
File 30, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, lines 20 and 21.
Go ahead, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move second reading amendment number Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 30. And Mr. Chairman, I would ask that it be divided. 1 through 3 would be the first division. 4 through 11 would be the second.
That is divisible. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask the body to vote aye on 1 through 3. What this does is leave in the $500,000 limit that we had in the previous Standing Committee Amendment brought to us by the Judiciary Committee. And this is appropriate, and I would ask you to support this first part of the amendment.
Discussion, Division 1. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am a little bit lost on this. It's deleting the first standing committee on those lines. And my understanding of that was that the first standing committee had $500,000 in there.
That was the amendment.
The amendment actually, this deletes the first standing committee amendment, which upped it to $500,000 from $300,000. If that's correct.
I would defer the sponsor of the amendment to speak to that first. Go ahead, Senator.
We want to defeat this. That's why I divide it. We defeat it. It goes back to the 500.
Right.
Any further discussion regarding Division 1? Seeing none. All right, let's go back, Senator Schiffer. Let me turn the mic on so we can all hear you well.
Mr. Chairman, technically, we need to defeat the lines 1 through 3, Division 1. That moves us back to the 500,000. Okay, the next debate will be on Division 2. Do we leave it at the 5 or go to the 3? I think, so we need to, the appropriation only. So we need to defeat this one.
Question being called in regard to Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, you've been asked to vote no. All those in favor of the first division, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. All right. Division 1 has failed. We are now back on Division 2, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2.
Okay. I must still be here from last night, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, speaking on in favor of the second portion of this amendment, in a sort of an interesting situation we have here now, since the previous amendment was defeated to have any appropriation, if you don't vote for this one for 300, there is no appropriation. I intended to take it from 500 to 300, but the 500 is not in place now. So you have an option of having, if you defeat this, there's no appropriation. And if you vote for it, there's a $300,000 appropriation. It's kind of a neat way, Mr. Chairman, to get where I wanted to go, but I wasn't really planning on it. But I would ask you to support this.
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, by all means, let's support it, but I think you're going to need a second reading amendment to clean it up.
Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think what we've done, I think we actually do still have an appropriation in, and the appropriation that's in there is for $500,000. If you vote in favor of the amendment in front of you, the Division 2, you will change the $500,000 to $300,000. If you vote no, which is the absolutely a wonderful thing to do, on Division 2, it will stay at $500,000. I think that's what we've gotten done so far with the amendments we've done. I'm going to suggest to you that 500,000 is an appropriate amount. It's not a high, it's not a low, it's pretty reasonable. The guy gets paid 100 bucks a day for every day he's wrongfully imprisoned, up to a total of $500,000. That's pretty reasonable. I urge you to vote no on this division.
Any Senator Perkins, I believe.
Trust me on this one. No, don't follow me, Mr. President. I don't know where I'm going. No, actually, in favor of Division 2, let's go back and let's just recap where we are and what Division 2 does for us, Mr. Chairman. Where we're at now is we've got a maximum of $500,000. Division 2 doesn't have anything to do with the maximum amount that would be awarded or settled in one of these things. It can be settled up to a maximum of $500,000 at $1,000 a day. The bill also provides that would be paid out the money goes into the treasurer's office and would be annuitized over 10 years. So even at $300,000, you've appropriated enough to pay this for 6 years. I would assume that since that's an obligation of the state, that we would come down and we would have 6 years to appropriate an additional $200,000 to finish out the maximum amount. So you can put the money in the treasurer's office and let it sit there, all $500,000, and you can go home and feel good about that. Or you can also go put $300,000 in and leave $200,000 in the general fund money for other purposes now, and then we would come back, and if and when this ever happens, we would come back and appropriate the additional money. I would urge you to save $200,000 from being set in the treasurer's office for who knows how long for no purpose, and that we would $300,000 provides the surety that will get done and gives us time to make sure that we can meet our obligations going forward if it is a $500,000 obligation. So I'd encourage you to vote in favor of Division 2.
Senator Hines, would you like to speak to Division 2, please?
Mr. Chairman, my question is that page 8, line 3, have been standing committee amendment, that section, have been defeated. So how can we have another amendment on a part that's already defeated?
Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, we actually took this out and then put it back in, and where we're at is where we started this whole deal. We've meant to change some sections, and I understand that, but that's crafting it. But the vote in front of us, I believe, is the Division 2. Do you want to have it at 500, or do you want it at 300, the way I track this? Mr. Chairman, let's see, we have another day of Committee of the Whole. Mr. Chairman, just to clarify this, could I respectfully request, barring objection, to lay this bill back for a day and let me sort through with greater minds than myself what exactly we've done and bring it back tomorrow in Committee of the Whole? Is that the motion?
The request is that Senate File 30 be laid back until tomorrow. Barring any objections, Senate File 30 has been laid back. Yeah, here.
With the appropriations? Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go get LSO.
Senator Hicks.
I don't know.
Yes. Okay. Members of the body, let's take our conversation behind the bar. Go ahead, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, would you stand and help me welcome the Snake River Rattlers with Tommy Sue Willie and the fifth grade class from Bags, Wyoming. Yeah!
Next bill for our consideration, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Want to do yours first? Go ahead.
All right, let's go to Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to be clear, and laying back is fine with me. Procedurally, the first part of that amendment that we voted on and was defeated, that's still in place, and we're going back, and the rest of this amendment has been withdrawn, and we're reconsidering. Is that correct?
That's the way I understand it, Mr. Chairman. I would look to the President. I would look to the majority leaders. Is that is also the way that you see the bill? Go ahead, Senator, or Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. President, that's the way I see it. I want to clarify that what really happened was when we killed the appropriation of $500,000, Section 2, there is no appropriation in this bill right now. And so, and quite frankly, the Second Amendment needs to have some cleanup, as the good senator from Natrona County said. And so by laying that back, we'll be able to accomplish and to redo that.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we all beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? I had just written you a note to flag that bill. But.
Yeah, I just texted you.
What are you laughing at?
Well, the whole bill.
We're just amazed. I wasn't even following up.
Well, that's what I said. I said, by doing this, you know, now there's no appropriation. I mean, I got what I wanted.
Come on in, Don.
Members of the Senate. The motion is
I haven't made it yet. Are there any announcements?
No, I got you. We're at that order of business.
We stand adjourned until 2 p.m.
The motion is to stand in recess until 2 p.m. Any announcements, Senator Geis?
We beg leave to rise.
Number 5, Agriculture, Public Land and Water Resources will meet upon adjournment tonight in S-15. Take up House Bill 4, Pesticide Control Compact, House Bill 10, Engrossed, Water Well Permits.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 12:30 in room S-11 to discuss and consider the following Senate files. Senate File 97, Appropriation to Wyoming Business Council Re-Referral. Senate File 113, Task Force on Expansion of Natural Gas Service, re-referral. House Bill 40, Engrossed State Employees and Officials Group Insurance Membership. House Bill 41, Emergency Medical Technician Pension Plan. And, Mr. President, there are 2 other bills there. I doubt very seriously we'll get to them, House Bill 46 and House Bill 51, Engrossed.
Okay. Other announcements? Hearing none, you heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senate stands at recess until 2 p.m.